Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Alf Bogen, who is the creator of Somnify. Now, Somnify, I was dying to get on the podcast because I had so many questions. Somnify has created a radar tracker, and it's a non-contact sleep tracker that you can put on your nightstand. I actually have it on my nightstand right now that I've been testing, and utilizes that radar tech to tell you things not only about your sleep, but also your environment throughout the course of the night, like air quality, the humidity levels, pressure in your environment, sound in your environment, ambient light. And then you can see it throughout the course of the night. So you can see, oh yeah, maybe it's fine as far as the light's concerned in the middle of the night. But then right around sunrise, then you start seeing all that spiking of that ambient light in your space, and that can disrupt your sleep. Same with sound, that you might see that throughout the course of the night and little ticks of that. Air quality being poor, humidity level being too high or too low. But then beyond that, one of the things that really piqued my interest is that they found themselves landing in Sleep Medicine, a highly ranked journal specializing in sleep, and it's validated against PSGs for its high precision for sleep stage classifications. And that is not something we see every day for sleep trackers in the wearable tech arena, that sleep stage classification. So all those times when people say, oh, my deep sleep is this, my REM is that, often when they're talking about wearable trackers on the hand or wrist, it's not that reliable. And yet the fact that this one found itself in that Sleep Medicine journal was definitely piqued my interest. Let's just say that. So from that place, I was very, very excited to have our guest on. So a little bit of a background. Alf Bogen is a 28-year technology veteran and one of the inventors of the highly successful AVR microcontroller, now acquired by Microchip. He is currently the co-founder and chief marketing officer at Vital Things, a company specializing in contactless sleep assisting products using very advanced hardware and software. And we're going to get into the weeds with him and understanding more and more about his background in our conversation, how he found himself creating such an interesting and eye-opening and what seems to be the beginning of what we're likely to hear more of. Google's already in a discussion around contactless tracking and more coming. So get ready to hear about more companies that are looking into this. And this is one of the first that I've had the opportunity to test out. So I'm very excited for you to dive in on this conversation and hear more about what really could very well be the future for sleep tracking and some of the implications that this could bring about. So hospital use, and so that you're not having to actually wear anything and it's just happening seamlessly. The sky's the limit for where we can see this finding itself. So if you do have any questions, call outs, any of those things, if you go to the sleepasaskill.com website, we have a little sleep bot on there. So you can feel free to just, you know, put in any of those questions, call outs, so that we can help get those answered when you're listening. So be thinking of those things as we really are aiming to make this company as accessible as possible to anyone who's looking to improve their sleep, and but also just expand the conversation around sleep, around sleep tech, the gamification of this, but also just the awareness that this can bring about in our daily lives. So if you have any other questions, don't hesitate, and looking forward to jumping into the podcast. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill, again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. I'm really excited to get into this topic today. We had an opportunity to speak a little bit before recording and I have so many questions, but let's just hop right on in. So I would love to hear from you a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background that had you lead into the creation of this product.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It's really exciting. My background is actually very technical. Most of my career has been in the semiconductor industry, doing microcontrollers and microchips, and I've been working in the U.S. for many, many years together with American companies. The company I did before the company where we do the sleep tracker is that we made a very, very advanced chip to measure small movements from a distance based on radio waves. So that's one of the sensors that we use in the product we're going to talk about today.
Wow. Okay. So already so many more things to dive into. That's incredible. So then how did it occur, this pivot into the realm of sleep? Was there a personal passion for you or just an interest or seeing a need in the market? How did that all occur?
So it's actually started by a Chinese customer that came to the previous company that I was running and asking for a baby monitor that could measure the breathing rate and that could measure the breathing curve so they can feel safer, not only have a video, but they could also see the breathing. So that's why one of the reasons we developed this sensor to detect actually the movements that comes from breathing. And then when we started testing that, we found out that it shows some very obscured results on ourselves, and especially my colleague, we had some fallouts during the night. We couldn't figure out what it was, so we sent him to the hospital to get a real check. And we found out that he had 60 breathing stops a minute, so he had severe sleep apnea. And this was a person that was completely healthy. We had no idea that he had sleep apnea. And then I went to the hospital to test just for fun, and I came out with a diagnosis as well that I had 17 breathing stops an hour and he had 60. So I had less, but still I had sleep apnea. So then we started to dive into this world of sleep problems and sleep disorders and found out that this is really a big problem. It's really a big challenge to solve. So our interest actually got triggered by finding out about ourselves and some issues that we ourselves had.
Wow. Okay. Well, I love hearing that. I mean, the creation of Sleep is a Skill came from my own personal problems with sleep, and personal just then became a real obsession in this world of sleep. So to hear your backstory is really incredible because it sounds like you took that presumably problem or area that you wanted to transform in your health and then really got up under it and created something like this. So this is really interesting. And to kind of just feature products just to feature them. Part of the reason that I was really excited to have you guys on is just because I myself have so many questions about how this works, what this looks like, because it seems to be a little bit kind of creating its own category in a lot of ways or just a newer feature. So I'd love to kind of break down what does it look like, how does it work, and why would we want to go into something like this versus just a standard wearable or what have you?
Yeah. No, I think that one of the things we decided early was that, I mean, since we were in this world of really, we had this sleep apnea situation, we worked with the sleep doctors and sleep scientists. And the way we got diagnosed was that we had polysomnography on our body, right? So we had sensors all over the head and we had on the body, and it was like a really, really cumbersome and really disturbing equipment to put on to measure sleep.
Yes. And we really, least, yeah.
Yeah, and we felt that we didn't really sleep so very well. So we asked the scientists, what would be your ideal tool to make this easier? And they said the ideal tool would be something that is good enough, that can be completely contactless, that can just sit next to the bed and measure sleep. But it has to be more accurate or much higher precision than what we see from the wearables. So we looked into the wearables and saw their studies and the precision of the sensors compared to polysomnography, the few studies that were out there. And then we raised the bar we wanted to see how close we can get to PSG, which is the short for polysomnography, as possible. And then we started to build a system which actually is based on machine learning and data science. So the algorithms are trained by professional sleep scientists. So we built a system that learned from the professionals, and we learned from the comparison to the gold standard PSG. And that way we built it up something that was really, really high precision. So we wanted to solve real problems and not to make a gadget, because that's the way we as a small company can make a difference. I mean, we could never compete with the huge companies selling gadgets. So we had to do something that differentiated us on quality.
Wow. And part of what had caught my attention was what seems to be some validation processes that you went through to ensure that it really does measure up to the standard, so the PSG. And so for you, what did that process look like to do that comparison, to kind of run that study so that we now have these, what seems to be really high numbers of high accuracy with your product against the gold standard?
There were two things we wanted to make sure was that one is we wanted to use the professionals as a part of developing the product so we could learn from them, because this is a thing that you need to do with a lot of different competences into the same team. The other thing we wanted to make sure was that the study was independent from us, because we wanted the study also to be like the ground zero of what we were building. So we didn't want to influence the study in a way where it was not trustable in the market. But not only the market, we wanted the study to be the reference study for using Somnify as a tool in sleep science. And to do that, you need a really good validation study, which is completely independent from the manufacturer, so that other scientists can trust the results. So we worked with the university, one of the universities in Norway, where they have the best sleep scientists. And they set up the study and collected data from one of the hospital studies that we had done, and also one of the studies that they have done on their own. So it was a study where you have polysomnography and actually somnifies in various positions in the room. So we have like one over the body and one on the side to check out if that has an impact on the result. And they did the same, but they did it in the home environment and we did it in a hospital environment. So, and then we collected data from 80 different people. It was scored by sleep scorers from US and from Norway. And it was 3 to 4 different scorers that were doing the score, which then said, looked at the polysomnography and also looked at video and scored the deep sleep, REM sleep, light sleep, and awake. And then we got a really good facet. The truth was very well defined. And also we decided that we want to work on the 30-second epochs, which is what the gold standard measures. They look at every 30 seconds and what is the status. And that is also different from some of the wearables and some of the other equipment, where they give you some kind of overview for the night. But also what we wanted to do was to look at every 30 seconds and match against that, which is, of course, a much harder task than giving average numbers. Then when we did that study, we started to train our algorithms, and then we measured the precision also based on that data set. But of course, we never used a data set that was used to train the algorithm. So we trained them with all the other data than what we tested. So it's a cross-validation study, which it's called. So, and then it was published. It was sent in to Sleep Magazine, and got approved. And that was really a breakthrough for us, because then that was like, okay, yes, we have done something that is, that's really meaningful. So
that's what I had seen. And I was just sort of in this shock for what you guys are creating, and really just that piqued my interest even more. So I guess just to back up, just to make sure that I'm getting all of this too. One of the things, so these different wearables, you know, just easy for people to access, easy to get suddenly a bit of a log on when you're sleeping, when you're not. And so some of the, depending on the wearables, tend to do match up a little bit better as far as it compares for just, are you asleep or are you awake? But even that, depending on the wearable, can be very questionable. But definitely one of the things I often share with people is to not put much stock into the sleep stages for any of these wearables at all, no matter how fancy pants they are. But so for you guys, now not only do we get to have that sense of awareness around were we asleep or were we awake, but then we're starting to get more kind of higher level data around the sleep staging. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. And that was our goal. And also in statistics, there is a term called Cohen's Kappa, which is a really important statistical term, which consumers don't really understand, but the professionals really understand. And what we get out of our study is really high Cohen's Kappa, which means that the models we are building are very robust. And so the results are more trustable and useful than what you can get if you just doing more type of guessing. I think wearables, I mean, are very interesting products, and we use wearables and we are testing wearables, and we haven't seen any validation study that shows sleep staging at the level that we can do yet. Certainly, they are also developing better and better wearables. But today, we haven't seen anything which is as good as what we have done. And the same is what the sleep scientist says. The good thing with wearables is that you, if you sleep in your car and at work or in the park or wherever, you can track that kind of sleep.
Oral sensors. We don't always recommend, but yes.
Yeah. So, but that is a good thing. I mean, the good thing with oral sensor is actually that you don't have to wear anything and you don't have to start anything or stop anything. Because what we realize is that if people need a routine where they start something and stop it and have to manage it, then they, it will last for a couple of days or weeks, and then you forget it, and then you have not the data you need, right? We have to remember that we use also the Somnify in senior homes and senior institutions and drug abuse institutions and hospital testing, where we have 24/7 monitoring, right? And we have live monitoring of breathing rate and things like that. And that comes from the same technology. For me, I mean, I'm a big wearable gadget guy, right? But my problem is that I change every 6 months, right? And then I have a new place to find data and I have a new brand. So it doesn't really give me the long-term baseline I need to really get that the health data out of it.
Wow, really interesting stuff. Okay, so this kind of could solve certain problems. So I have some clients that are wearing upwards of 4 sleep gadgets at a time. I mean, again, not recommended, nothing that you need to be doing, but just I tend to seem to bring into my ether a lot of people that are pretty equally obsessive on these topics. And then just, but thinking that more data is better when, particularly to your point, if the quality isn't quite there, and then the usability, and then the long-term range of that to have that longitudinal data. So, but one of the problems can often be is for those people that are looking to get more and more data, they're layering on the head-based trackers, which can often have some, unfortunately, as of right now, you know, not always the most comfortable. They're falling off. You're getting half a night of data, thinking that that would be the closest thing for those sleep staging elements. And you're pointing to something really important that we could hopefully even eliminate some of the need for that. So then I have some people, so I've asked a couple of people before as having this conversation, you know, anything that they would want to know about something that would be in the room with them. And so they had concerns. There was some rumor of Google doing something of this nature, some radar tech, and that it would be in your space and security issues or EMFs or, you know, kind of that line of concern. Do you have any thinking on that? Is that just nothing that we need to really be overly wary about?
It's an important question to ask for sure. I mean, it's always, if we couldn't give a good answer to that, that would be a problem. First of all, the radio waves that we send out are in certified bands, radio frequency bands. So, I mean, so they are within absolutely the strictest requirement to radiation of radio waves. And we use a special technique which is extremely low power. So we send out, which is similar to 1/1000th of a Bluetooth hands-free set. So if you have a Bluetooth hands-free set in your ear, what we send out and that reach your body is 1/1000th of that. So it's really, really, really low power. So it's completely, completely harmless. And we are measuring then the echo from the body on that radio wave, which is also completely harmless. So there is nothing in there that is high energy or dangerous in any way to the health. And of course, we have a regular Wi-Fi chip in there that communicates with the Wi-Fi in your house. And we have a Bluetooth communication to your cell phone as well. So we use only regular communication technologies that you have around you all the time. And we have the sensor that measures the movement, which is extremely much lower power than any of those. There's nothing to be concerned about. Let's put it that way. We have also a lot of other sensors in there, which we can talk about. I think that's an important thing also to bring up, that when you measure sleep, the question is, what is causing my sleep and what can I do to improve my sleep? And then it's not enough to just know the sleep. You need to know more than that, right? Of course, we are also measuring the room temperature, we're measuring the light in the room, we're measuring the light frequency, so we can see if you're exposed to red or blue lights, or if you have the wrong light color to really get a good sleep, to get a good rhythm. And then we are measuring humidity, which is an important parameter for sleep as well. Sound, the noise levels is something we are measuring. We are also, of course, measuring when you go to bed, when you get out of bed and things like that. And then we do deep analysis on what actually impacts your sleep. So if you use Somnify for a couple of weeks, the sleep coach will tell you that actually in your case, when you have low temperature in your room, you actually sleep better. While, for example, my colleague, he sleeps better when it's warm. I can't understand how that is possible because I can't
either. That's amazing.
You know, the freezing point. That is something which I think, but for him, it's the opposite. And also, for example, when you go to bed might impact one person a lot while another person really don't care. The sleep quality gets good anyway or bad anyway, right? So we are building more and more analysis about what is actually causing your bad or good sleep and to give you information about how you can actually improve it. So we have 10 different sensors in Somnify today in one device.
Wow. Okay. The more you speak, the more questions I have. So then just kind of backing up. So with all these sensors, with its ability, how does it work for couples? There's no concern with its ability to kind of differentiate between two people, and does it log for two people, or how does that work?
That's also one of the things which we sold in the way we did the technology that where we are acquiring the movement, that we can measure the distance to the movement very, very precisely.
Sure.
So we don't only measure movements down to heartbeats, but we can also measure where this movement is. So if you are two people in the bed, theoretically, we could actually measure both people with one device.
Okay.
But we don't do that. We're only measuring the closest person. So if you are two people in the bed, it will measure the closest person. But if you want to measure two people, you can have two devices and they will not interfere at all. There will be no effect from one sensor to the other. So there is no problem to have 2, 3, 4, 5 sensors in the same room for that sake. You can also set the maximum range. So, for example, if you are two in a bed, you could set that to the middle of the bed, which helps you if you are the closest person and it's measuring you and you go out of the bed, so it doesn't think that you rolled over and start measuring the other person. So you can help the sensor to differentiate also, so it's precise when one person is leaving the bed.
Got it. Okay. So do the type of new parents or what have you that have multiple like kids hopping in and all that, does that cause a bit of a problem in trying to get the accuracy if the kids hopping on one side or the other? Does any of that cause a problem or?
Yeah, I mean, if you're sleeping and hugging your dog, for example,
yes,
night long, or you have a kid that's jumping on top of you or sleeping in the bed and moves around, that will cause problems because it will probably track that movement as well as your movement. it's depending on where people are in the bed. But if you have your bed full of other things that are moving, it's not the best thing to get a good result. That's
sure.
So we recommend to keep the bed for people and sleeping.
And if you do other activities, which is a good rule of thumb anyway. But got it. And what about this smart alarm that I'd seen on the website? How does that work? I have so many people that want to know, how can I strategically wake up at the right time? Can this help with that?
That wake up function, it makes me smile because that's really my favorite feature with the product. Yeah, because it's two things. One, we have a sound design, which is so smooth. So you wake up so nice just because of the sound that we generate. And it starts like very, very low and it's like just wakes you up so slowly. The other thing is that when you activate a smart alarm, let's say I want to wake up at 7 o'clock and I set a 15-minute smart alarm, then it will, from 6:45 to 7, it will start to look at when I'm in light sleep or awake and starts to wake me up. So it avoids the time where I'm in deep sleep. So you never get this feeling where you are like suddenly waking up and you think the world is falling around together around you. You just wake up smoothly. And that function works extremely well. So you can also use that for power naps, because that's another function we have where you can get guided breathing to fall asleep, and then you can wake up smoothly with a smart alarm. But if you are in deep sleep the entire 15 minutes, it will wake you up at 7 o'clock. So you know that your final wake up call will happen even if you are not ready. So
got it. Okay. And with that, that's awesome. I love your excitement and passion around the wake up function. That sounds like that's something that's helping you in your life as well. And just again, to back up, because I have so many questions. So someone purchases this, they put it into their room. Maybe this is a newer sleep tracker for tracking in general. I know you had mentioned that this had originally kind of spawned from this discovery around sleep apnea. Now, is that something that you're able to, because, you know, traditionally, certainly we're not thinking of wearables as kind of obviously diagnosing anything, but does this give us any sort of clues if someone might be in even the mild, moderate, or severe area of sleep apnea, or is that a whole different conversation?
One of the things we do, which wearables cannot do so well, is we are measuring the breathing curve. So we are not only measuring the breathing rate, but we can also follow the breathing curve. So one of the things we are developing now is, together with one private hospital here in Norway, is actually to detect sleep apnea. And it's not meant to be for diagnosing. It's more to screen if you are disposed to or if you are in the risk of having sleep apnea. At the beginning, we don't want to have diagnosis, but we want to tell people that you should go and get a check. Today, as the product is today in the market, me, for example, as a trained person with Somnify, I can see from the hypnograms. For example, myself, I use a CPAP machine at night. Mm-hmm. And when I don't use a CPAP machine, I can clearly see the difference. So I can tell if I've had sleep apnea or not. But that is not something that we analyze and give people information about. It's more things you can see when you have a little experience with it. What you will see is that you have wake-ups more often during night and you don't see as much deep sleep. Because every time your body wants to go into deep sleep, you get a sleep apnea situation and it wakes you up to keep you alive, basically. So you'll see that you have very, very little deep sleep. So for example, myself, if I sleep without the CPAP machine, I can be down to 5 to 7% deep sleep. And it usually happens just when I fall asleep in the beginning of the night. And I never get this different... when you fall asleep, you have like 4 or 5 different turns where you have REM sleep, deep sleep, and then it goes 4 times where the deep sleep gets shorter and the REM sleep gets longer. And I don't get the deep sleep later at night. When I sleep with the CPAP machine and I don't get these breathing stops, I see that my body get much more deep sleep and I don't see the wake-ups as much. So I can see it. So people can actually see it, but we don't really give them that answer right out.
Sure, right. And you'd mentioned...
Today.
No, good distinction. And you had mentioned that there's a sleep coaching element. Is that automated thing, or is there a person that you can kind of speak to, or how is that working at the moment?
Oh, that is an automated thing. I mean, we do have doctors employed in Vital Things. We have two doctors that are working not full time, but part time with us. So we have experts in house, but the sleep coach works so that we transfer all our knowledge into analysis, and then we try to see what affects your sleep.
Sure.
But the sleep coach is something that we have just started to launch. So that is what's out there today is like the first level. In our labs, we have much more algorithms that we are testing than what you see in the product today, but that will also come out as soon as we have validated them more.
Wow. That could lead into one of my other questions, which is because it just seems like you guys are quite visionaries and have some different use cases. Like I like how you spoke to, you know, kind of elderly homes, hospitals, you know, it sounds like there's a real applicability to this in many different areas. So do you see certain goals for yourself for 2021 and beyond where you think that this could go for people or different avenues that this could support people with in their sleep?
Yeah, and I think if you look at, this elderly care, that is something that is ongoing. It's moves slower, but and it's a combination of sleep analysis, but also live digital supervision, right? Monitoring. For the consumer type of people, we work a lot with the Olympic athletes and top athletes to see how sleep impacts performance and things like that. And that is something that we try to transfer to me and you. I mean, maybe I shouldn't talk about you. Maybe you're a top athlete, but I'm certainly not. But,
Not today. No.
Not today. Yeah. So I think that what we try to do is to do things which optimize your energy. And we use the work with the Olympic teams to understand how that can be done. And we do studies about sleep and stress and sleep and training load and things like that. And then we try to use that into the consumer market to give me and you a better sleep so we can get more energy during the day. So we really, our vision is really to try to help people find better sleep and not just tell them that you are sleeping poor, because you probably know that already when you buy the device.
Right. Absolutely. So. Yeah. Often it's a pain point reason when we make a purchase like that, for sure. And I also like one of the things I was thinking of is for certainly in the US and imagine for sure in other countries, you know, some of the mental health concerns, particularly that have been going on with the pandemic and just a number of things. And we know that mental health and sleep are so tightly connected. And I could just see that if this is something that is kind of happening in the background, could really bring about that applicability, the kind of sticky nature of having, of building that habit, because you don't really have to do much, just beyond go to sleep, but to have that information, I think could be really valuable for people.
Yeah, it certainly is. And one thing with COVID-19 is also that if you looked into Lancet, one of the latest articles about it was that it's actually causing sleep problems. So if you had the virus, you might get mild to severe sleep problems out of it. So that is also a factor that makes it maybe more interesting. But also, one of the ways I use mine is that I have my family on my app. My mother has, my father has a sleep sensor, my uncles have sleep sensor. I can watch them every morning and I check their breathing rate. And I see that, for example, my mother has a very stable breathing rate. And if she gets an infection or another health problem, that will impact, in most cases, that will impact your breathing rate. So when she has a stable breathing rate, and since I've measured on her for a long time, I know her baseline. So I can use that to monitor my family and my old part of the family to take care of them. And I use it more often to tell my mother that she's not sick than telling her that she's sick. She feels very safe and taken care of because we have this in her bedroom. But since there is no camera, we don't send any sound, so we don't take any privacy away from the meter. So.
Right. Okay. So was that available for everyone, or is that because you created the thing?
That's in the consumer product. That's available the one we sell in the market. So the scientists and the research editions, remember, we made this for the scientists in the first place.
Sure.
And then we made a consumer version that had the same accuracy and a lot of the same functions, but you don't, in the research edition, what's different is that you get access to an API where you can take out data online from other systems to integrate in other systems. We have a web interface where you can do analysis in addition to the app. And you can also, you can build up, for example, if you're a coach in a soccer team, you can build up groups and you can have multiple sensors and you can do analysis of groups and things like that. That you cannot do in the consumer edition, but the consumer edition has all the functions you need with the same precision as the research edition. So
wow. Is there like a fee or like a licensing thing to get to have almost like that dashboard backend?
For the research version, there is a monthly fee. We have a completely different pricing model for the scientists.
Sure.
We also have leasing models because some of the sleep science projects can be like a 3-month or a 6-month project. So then you can lease sensors and data analysis for that period of time.
Interesting.
For the consumer, we have a premium subscription where you get all the analysis and also all the new things that we do. You don't need it to get valuable data, but if you want all the insights and all the analysis, which are personalized to you, you need that subscription. And that that covers our costs, of course, on the processing and collecting the data. And it's also, of course, part of how we make money on this.
Oh, interesting. So, and then does it require a smartphone to connect with that for certainly a consumer level? Or is that not something that's part of it?
To view the data, you would use a cell phone, a smartphone, or a tablet. When it's set up, you don't need, you can run it for a year or two or three without using the cell phone at all. It will connect via Wi-Fi. You need in your phone to set up the right Wi-Fi so it connects, and then it's connected to the database and it will run from there without the phone. But the phone is what you use, for example, to set the alarm.
Sure.
If it's going to be Monday to Friday, or if it's going to wake up on the weekends, or if you want smart alarm, or...
No, this is exciting because I was thinking of it just because I'd a little bit ago had an anthropologist on the podcast, and he was saying how for some of his studies with... more tribal groups. I mean, this is a little more a unique use case, but so he was doing different studies with different universities. And part of the challenge was that he was using the Oura Ring and to connect it with a smartphone to have, you know, all these people in kind of living in remote areas of the world. That was part of a barrier. Again, very, very limited use case on that. But I'm just wondering, it's of all the different elements, I actually have certain clients that are anti-smartphones. And so some of the wearables don't apply for them because they can't use them without having the smartphone. So just wondering for that type of group, if there could be that way around it. So that's really interesting. And I like what you said about that it could just be running in the background, because I do have some people that are in that percentage or a smaller percentage of people that getting this data can, at the time where they're at in their life, might be anxiety provoking, but we still might want to be gathering that data without them influencing their days in a way that, you know, it's kind of could be negative or for them could set them up in a way that won't support some of their goals. So that is interesting that we could potentially just be gathering that without them influencing their behavior in certain ways that won't benefit.
We had, for example, the Norwegian soccer team preparing for the World Championship, and they used Somnify the last 6 months before the championship and also during the championship. And then the athletes didn't have access to the data at all. It was only the coaches, the physiotherapists that had access to the data, because access to the data might also influence your sleep, right? And it might get you concerned. You might compare data and you might not understand why. So in many cases, it's not really helpful to see the data yourself. Same, we have doctors that use Somnify and they send Somnify home with clients. Then we set them up with, we have very small modems. So you can plug the small modems into the power supply because that has two outputs, one for either your cell phone and Somnify, or you can put a modem and Somnify. And then the only thing they do is that they plug it into the wall and they measure for 2 weeks, and then they go back to the doctor with the device and they have never seen any data at all.
Yeah.
And they don't have to set up anything. It just plugs in and works. So in many cases, you don't want people to have focus on the data themselves if they have a problem with it. So
yes. Wow. Well, this is really interesting. I feel like, you know, we could talk for hours about all of the different ways that this could, you know, really impact the globe. So first of all, thank you so much for coming on here. And so I just wanted to shift gears quickly, for we're adding on a kind of new thing at the end of our podcast, just because we've gotten feedback from people saying that they want to know, okay, so for people that are so in this conversation around sleep, what are they doing? So just wanted to ask you just a couple quick three questions around your sleep. And the first one just being, what is your nightly sleep routine? Does it have anything to do with Somnify, or are there other things that you're doing to support your sleep at this point?
Yeah, so one thing that the Somnify clearly indicated is that I sleep much better when it's cold in the room and well ventilated. So right now, even in the winter, I have my window open. I have two windows in my sleeping room, and the small window is open even in the wintertime. And so I open the window at least 2 hours before I go to bed to make sure that it's cold when I go to bed, because that makes my sleep onset, the time before I yep. fall asleep, shorter. And that is something that we have analyzed with our data, which is something that will come in the worse and in the market soon too. That is one thing. And then I think I need to go to bed. I know I need to go to bed like before 11 o'clock.
Yes.
I won't say I'm very good at that. So, but I
yes,
know that.
You're not alone.
But I know that if it goes over midnight, I really get bad sleep, because I lose a lot of my deep sleep, and sure. I clearly can see that. So, yep. So for me to go to bed before 11 is really, really important.
Wow. Well, those are great answers and very relatable. And the next question is actually, it's almost like tailored for you, because it's what is on your proverbial nightstand, you know, whether it's gadgets, supplements, ambiance, apps, but I would imagine one of them is what we've just been speaking about, but you can share if there's anything else you'd want to point to.
Oh, it's a night table?
Yeah, the proverbial night table. Like, you know, so I'd imagine the Somnify would be one of them, but are there any other kind of gadgets, supplements, things that you would speak to?
There's a CPAP machine.
Yes.
And there's a glass of water. And it's my cell phone charging.
Got it.
And of okay. course, Somnify.
And of course, Somnify. Okay.
But I have my Somnify in my up in the window and not on the night table. I have it a little bit further away. So, but you also can have the Somnify on the wall, you know, on the wall mount, which is more stable and better. But I have it on the next to my bed. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then finally, what, if any, has been your kind of sleep aha moment or kind of biggest change to your sleep game in your life?
That's clearly to find out that I have sleep apnea.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I was healthy. I didn't have very high BMI. I was exercising a lot. I was not in the risk at all. I was like Iron Man, and I felt like king of the world, and was like thinking that people with sleep apnea are overweight and not trained at all. And so
sure.
I got a little shock when I had no idea I had sleep apnea.
Wow, that is, and I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that's helping to break this image that many of us have of what someone with sleep apnea looks like, and it's not the case. So
yeah, and when we had the 80 people we picked for the study, we picked people with a small neck diameter,
yeah,
and which had a BMI with below 28 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
We picked people that was very sure they didn't have any sleep disorder. And 10% had sleep apnea.
Wow. Yeah, the implications.
So the number of people with sleep apnea that are causing sleep problems and less energy during day is really, there's a lot of gray numbers there. So it's we are very excited about that, if we can help solving that problem in the world, because that's really something that we have felt on our own body.
Let's put it that way. Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been incredible. I mean, I feel like we could have you on for part two, part three, part four, but for now, I'm sure you piqued some people's interest. So how can they find out more about your company? Where do they go? Where is this available? You know, all the details.
Yeah, so we have a website, which is somnify.com. where you will be guided to either the research section or a consumer section or the healthcare section. Right now, you will get right into the consumer section, but that might change pretty soon. And then we have a web shop where we can send out things. And we also have the Indiegogo page where we... I'm actually not sure if you can purchase there anymore because we did a campaign there. But certainly contact us if you can't get purchase it, and we will help you out. So we can support US from the Indiegogo store, and we can support the rest of the world from the Norway European store. And we send with DHL, so even people in the States get their device. One said to me yesterday, I ordered on Wednesday and I got it on Friday, so how come? And we said, yeah, that's DHL. So
that's amazing.
You get the product quickly.
Okay, got it. All right, and we'll add all that in the show notes too, so we can ensure that people can have access to this. This is very exciting. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your wisdom and what you guys are creating. It's just the innovation level seems very groundbreaking. So thank you.
Thank you so much for letting me talk to you, and good luck with your podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.